songs of freedom, 'cause all I ever had, redemption songs, all I ever had, redemption songs, these songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
Welcome to Radio Free Canada. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, with Ryan Gable. It's November 22nd. This is Redemption Radio. We are here in the face of continual encroaching state and church terror, designed to invoke fear in us, but we are not going along with that. We stand in Bob Marley, who just sung for us his spirit of redemption and freedom. Welcome to all of you. Today we have a special guest, Heart Warrior Chosa, who is an Aboriginal woman from Minnesota, who is a survivor of the murderous St. Joseph's Catholic Residential School, so-called, in Chamberlain, South Dakota. She's going to join us for the first half of the show. And in the intro and also in the second half, we're going to go into events recently in Europe, how this recent campaign of state terror is spreading, and we have to respond internally and externally. We're going to be talking about that. We welcome your comments if you follow the website, canatarepublic.ca, also write to us, republicofcanata@gmail.com. Welcome, Brother Ryan. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, Kevin. How are you doing?
Oh, fine. You know, I often think that, you know, whenever this garbage comes down, it just makes me even more determined and kind of, you know, this thing has a whole humorous side to it, which we can talk about today, but What are your thoughts recently on developments in Paris? And now it's spread to Belgium. Apparently, they're invoking the same state of emergency, and everything is shut down there. What do you think about all this?
Well, some of these so-called terrorists have actually been living in Belgium, and that seems to be a hotbed for some of the ISIS activity. So, first of all, I think it is very important, not that we have time to go into it today, but to go into a history of what created ISIS, both U.S. and other countries' foreign policy, and how it became what it is today as not true Islam, but a much more obviously radical version of Islam mixed with a whole bunch of state-sponsored terrorism on top of that. From my understanding of what's happened in Belgium, one of the main so-called ringleaders, Abdelhamid Abad, who was a 27-year-old, he was photographed, and they used this photograph, they circulated widely of him holding up the ISIS flag and him holding up a Quran by this Humvee, which might have even been a U.S. Humvee, and they supposedly tracked him using cellular technology, using a cell phone they found in a trash can outside of the Bataclan in Paris, where one of the shootings took place, and they say that they tracked him to the Saint Denis apartment complex, which is in northern Paris, and they say that they got a tip that he was there. Somebody supposedly saw him. Now, this is very important, Kevin, because they have no evidence. They said they have a tip, which doesn't necessarily mean they actually had a tip. They just had a suspicion. And so instead of going to the complex and maybe doing some surveillance, which they admit it had been under surveillance prior to this anyway, which also begs the question, if the apartment had been under surveillance, they were able to track using the cell phone the communications of Abad and other of these so-called terrorists, why did the major security apparatus prior to the events not stop the events from taking place? There's many perspectives on that. Also, right. Go ahead.
Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, just one last thing to sum up. The main part of this is, though, when the police go to this apartment complex, they dished out 5,000 rounds of ammunition and collapsed the apartment complex. And that is a true act of terrorism, something maybe we can get into a little bit later.
Yeah, and before we kind of jump into this in the second half of the show, it's important for people to realize that the bigger context of this is the G20 summit on climate change is going ahead in Paris. And I noticed the premier of British Columbia, Christy Clark, much hated politician, is flying over to Paris. Well, folks, if there's a major terrorist alert out and you're suspending civil liberties and attacking your own population because of this threat, why are prominent politicians coming to the city at the same time? You only do that if you know the attack isn't going to hit them. And that only happens if you're controlling the terrorists or there's people, your friends who are. So, I mean, it's it's so easy to see through these transparent, you know, scenarios.
That's a really good point. And that is true. It's the Global Climate Change Summit, where they're going to be pushing, as Pope Francis announced at the UN a few months ago, for this global governance and the carbon taxes and everything else.
Right. Now, we have also a news item I want to talk about later. It has to do with the RCMP in British Columbia. For any of you West Coast listeners, quite an amusing story, actually, how they're involved, actually, in their own campaign of setting up, quote, terrorist attacks. We'll get into that. We're just waiting for Heart Warrior Chosa, who's our guest, to come on the line. And I also wanted to just give a brief intro into what some of what she'll be talking about. We spoke over the last few shows about this residential school where children died, like in all of them, in St. Joseph's School in Chamberlain, South Dakota. Now, it's still operating. It's milking all sorts of taxpayer money and money from unsuspecting donors who are falling for this, which has been proven to be already a fraudulent campaign by the Catholic Church to raise money by sending out, you know, fake cards from, you know, non-existent children, Sioux children or Lakota children, asking for money to help their education. Well, they've raised over $30 million fraudulently. The IRS knows about it. They're not doing anything about it. Once again, they're turning a blind eye to this, just as they did over the years when children were being murdered. And I met Heart Warrior Chosa in Duluth a number of years ago. We spoke together at a conference, and it's a real honor to have her on. So, Heart Warrior, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for coming on Radio Free Canada. I just gave folks a little bit of a background, but I wonder if you could just say a little bit about yourself and, you know, the history, some of the history you experienced at the St. Joseph School in South Dakota.
Well, I'm 70 years old now, and when I was seven, I was sent to boarding school in Chamberlain, South Dakota, St. Joseph. My parents, my mother had a thyroid problem, and so she took us there thinking it had been like a school she had gone to, but it wasn't. It was, but she didn't know that. Anyway, so it was in South Dakota along the Missouri, kind of an isolated area, and I noticed all the kids crying. All the kids were had been forcibly taken from their parents, and so they were all upset and everybody was crying. Since I had been brought there and I trusted my mother, I knew without a doubt she would come after us. So I wasn't scared and crying like the other kids, but I was watching them and wondering why they were all crying so hard. And then I had been the youngest there, or not the youngest, but the smallest, put it that way, in the little girl's playroom when I was introduced. And then our first night in the dormitory, they had the girls divided into two parts. It went from first through eighth grade. And they had the littler girls, I think it was one first grade through fourth grade. And then fifth grade through eighth was the big girls. So they had a different matron. And the matron for the little girls was, when I look back on it, I can see she was a young woman, but back then she looked old to me. And she had two different colored eyes and was kind of peculiar looking, kind of dark skin, olive colored. And then they wore these black, they were Benedictine nuns. And I had never seen that before. So they all had like these long black robes and these bouncy white discs around their neck. And then long yep. black veils, and, you know, I mean, they just looked really weird to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of like a specter or something. And so that night in the dormitory, all the little girls had called out, because I got there anyway. So all the girls evidently had been trained in this. I hadn't, so I didn't know about it, but all of the little girls cried out, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, good night, Sister Naomi. And they would all holler that out, and then she'd go out the door. And then, of course, some little girls would at night whisper and talk, because we had like rows and rows of beds, maybe four rows of beds, long rows. And the nun would come back, maybe come back in about 10 minutes later, and whoever had been talking, she would, or who she thought had been talking, she would flounce in. She flounced in and grabbed this one little girl, jerked her out of bed by her ears, and her ears ripped, and there was blood squirting all over. And
her ears ripped? You mean it came off a bit?
No, they didn't come off, but they ripped. Where she grabbed her by the ears.
Yeah.
And this freaked me out. I saw that. I couldn't believe it. And so I ran and I attacked her. And grabbed her veils and swung around her like she was a maypole. And then I dove under the beds and I was belly crawling up the line of beds. And she was tearing the beds open to get at me. And then that was like, I suppose, the opening shot of my 4 years there.
Could you say a little bit? You know, you mentioned about how they had you in bed for a while and the kinds of things they were doing to you. Could you describe some of that for us?
Well, everybody went home in the spring. So there were wintertime kids and there were summertime kids. And so the kids that came in the winter already spoke English. The kids that came in the summer only spoke their native language. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so then they'd bring in a different nun crew for them. So I was there year-round, so I saw the whole thing, me and my brother, because our mother didn't come for 4 years. And so that's why I saw these different things, different programs. What was your question?
Well, you know, you were telling me when I met you in Duluth a few years ago, you spoke about how they had you in this bed and they were doing things to your feet.
Oh, yeah, my feet. Okay, so I got in a position where in Indian culture, traditional Indian culture, you have Ogichidas, which are warrior protectors.
Yeah.
And that's what I was, evidently, for 4 years there. If I saw them attack somebody, I attacked them. And then I ended up drawing a lot of heat on myself. But that protected the other girls because I could see that psychologically they couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And I knew that I could. And I wasn't afraid of death because I remembered when I was born that there's no such thing as death, only a change of world. So I was fearless, pretty much. Anyway, so the nun, one summer, before the... There was no kids there. There were always busy times when the wintertime kids were gone and the summertime kids hadn't come, or the summertime kids left and the wintertime kids hadn't come. So there'd be a space of time where I was there alone. And it was during one of those times that I was in the shower. We never got to use the shower in the dorm, but when I was there alone, I got to use it. And I was in there, and after that shower, my feet got itchy. And so the nun said, oh, I know what that is, you know. And she soaked my feet and then wrapped them up. And what that did is it festered athlete's foot, to the point that my feet were so infected that I couldn't stand on them or they'd crack and bleed and stuff.
Yeah.
This went on from fall till spring, one entire winter.
Do you think she was doing that to you deliberately? Because, you know, we have stories from many other residential schools where they would bind the children's feet, they would cut their tendons, they would deliberately hobble the kids'
feet so they could
run away.
At the time, I was a kid, you know, a child. I didn't suspect that she did that on purpose. Mm-hmm. But then when I saw in the morning when she would rip the bandages off my feet, it would rip my feet open and soak my feet, that this form of torture was debilitating to the other kids to see it. And I think I got a flash of awareness then that there was more to it.
So it's like a psychological torture as well.
It was a psychological torture for them. It was a physical torture for me.
Now, she made you, you had some pet mice, too. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I wouldn't trade the boarding school experience for anything, virtually, maybe because of who I am. Because I experienced miracles. Like in the spring, I felt the life force. I felt life rising up from the earth and going up the trees and everything. I could feel that in my own body. And I had to get out of there. And so they were having that big mass, super long mass where they have, I don't know if they're weeds or what, but they're waving them back and forth. And they would get everybody really dressed up fancy for that. It was a super long mass. And then they would have special treats for the kids, and the kids got to play all day. It was like a special day. And so I was determined I was going to go, and because I'd been in bed all that time. And I decided I was going to totally ignore my feet. As far as I was concerned, I didn't have feet. I was going to go no matter what.
Yeah.
And so I did. I went out and I played all day long. I played all day long, and when I came in toward evening, I looked down at my feet. The bandages were gone, and my feet were completely healed.
Wow.
And I consider that like a miracle.
Right.
And I had other miracles that happened in spite of what the situation was.
Right.
So it was strengthening for me in that way.
Go ahead, sorry.
With the mouse, the nun... I had heard it was in the fall, and I had heard it was her birthday, and so I thought, well, she's so mean to the kids and everything, you know, so I thought, well, I have to do something. I have to give her a symbol so she would see herself, you know, and for what she's doing, so I thought that it would be out along with Seven Chalk Hills, which is along the Missouri River. So I started out early, went out there, and had to climb up and down these really steep hills. And there were, like, rattlesnakes, and there was a lot of those pear cactuses. And I would slip and slide sometimes into these cactus and get stuck by them. And eventually... on the fourth hill, I thought, I slid into one of those cactuses, and I thought, that's it. That's it, you know. So I very carefully dug one up, so I wanted the roots and everything. And then I had to bring it back, and I had to be really careful going down and up these chalk hills because they were very steep and crumbling and stuff. And... so finally I got it back, and it was near sunset when I had started out early in the morning. And so I didn't want to be seen by anybody, so I kind of snuck around and made it into the little girl's playroom, and there was the nun. And I ran to her, and I said, happy birthday, and I held up this cactus, and his little roots and everything were there. And she looked, and... she took the cactus, and she kind of wavered like she was going to fall over, and she started crying and sobbing hysterically, and she could barely say it, but she said, choking out through her sobs, you're the first one that has ever thought of me on my birthday. And she really, really started crying.
Yeah. Is this the, sorry to interrupt, is this...
cactus and ran to the secret nun's quarters with it, crying. You could hear her sobs dying away down the hall. And I stood there with my mouth hanging open, and I thought, my God, that's what's wrong with her. That's what's wrong with her.
Sorry to interrupt, is this the same...
nobody.
Is this the same Sister Naomi who was doing that stuff to your feet?
Yes.
Now, she also made you throw your pet...
Pardon?
The reason I asked you earlier is... you said something to me once about she made you throw your pet mouse into the furnace.
Yes, I'm getting to that. I had to tell you this story so you understand that story. So this story, this is where I really saw her. I saw her, what was wrong with her. And she cried for 3 days. And then she finally went to the sister superior and complained that I had done that on purpose. And then she got some other nuns, and they cooked up this scheme to try to hit me psychologically. They thought that I had dealt a blow to her psychologically, and they were going to try to get me back. So that summer, I had gotten this little field mouse that I was playing with, and I asked her if I could keep him for a pet. And this is a time of when I was there alone. And she said, yes, I could. So I had this little pet, and I would catch him bugs and catch him things and take care of him. And this went on for, I don't know, about a week or so. And then she said, she came flouncing in one day and said, now you have to take and throw him in the furnace. And so she walked with me up to the furnace, which is way around the building and up the hill, to watch me throw this mouse into the furnace. And I pretended I threw him in the furnace, but I let him go on the side. And then the next day I was skipping along, and one of the other nuns stuck their head out and said, from the kitchen nun, said, oh, we saw your mouse, and it got trapped in a mouse trap. He's all flat and dead. Says that to me.
Yeah.
And I looked up at her, and I knew then that they were in cahoots, and I knew that the mouse did not come back and get trapped.
Right.
Because he was wild.
More psychological kind of torment on you.
Yeah, what mouse would come back into captivity after he'd been wild all his life? Don't. So I knew they were lying.
We've got less than 5 minutes before the bottom of the show, so I just wanted to ask you kind of generally, I remember you had mentioned that kids had been beaten in the school so badly that it turned them into imbeciles from all the tortures.
That happened to one little girl there. This nun seemed to go ballistic on Sundays, and so after Sunday Mass, she would really be horrible, worse than ever. And one time she beat the hell out of me, you know. She was kicking me, hitting me with pipe cleaners, and my shoes had fallen off, and she was really rabid. So then she flounces downstairs, and I'm going around picking up my shoes and finding my shoes and fixing my hair and straightening my dress and to come downstairs. And when I got downstairs, she had gone into the little girl's playroom, and she must have grabbed one of the little girls down there and hit her or whatever she did. I don't know what she did to her because I didn't see it. I got down there, and that little girl was sitting on the floor, drooling, acting like a baby. She could no longer walk or anything. She acted just like an infant. And they took her away.
I want to get Randy if he has any questions, but one final thing I wanted to ask you. You did mention when we talked before about it was normal for children to be worked on by the dentist and not receive painkillers, is that right?
Yeah, yes. I don't. I had a super high pain tolerance, so to me, I wouldn't have flashed on that. You know? But they did line everybody up and without too much examination and just drill their teeth.
Without painkiller?
You know? Yeah, it was like an assembly line, you know, or something. And they weren't, you know, like today you go in the dentist's office and they take x-rays and they check this and check that. Well, they didn't do any of that. They just lined us up and everybody got drilled.
Oh, God. Ryan, do you have any questions before we finish off?
Yeah, just one quick comment. I was thinking about how the nuns specifically targeted you, Heart Warrior, and because of the actions you took by fighting back against them, did that maybe give other children sort of a motivation to also do this? Did anybody else sort of stand up in the wake of what you did?
No. No. Not everybody's an Ojibwa either, and they're not meant to be. You know, they're, I could see, this is one thing that I saw, especially when I saw this happen to Diane, that was not backwards. What I saw is that the brutality of the white culture on Indian culture would knock half our people backward in their evolution, maybe back one entire cycle, which is 26,000 years. And it would knock them backward like they knocked her backward. The full bloods would stay intact. But the breeds, the half-breeds, they will fight harder and longer, but they will emerge stronger than any full-blood had ever been. That's what I saw.
Right. Heart Warrior, I want to invite you back to come on the show again. I think you've got a lot to share, and we do want to hear a lot more. I'm sorry we only have half the show this time, but we will be in touch, and you know, this is an open invitation to come back on the show, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for giving me a forum to share.
Well, we'll do more.
That's something that should be dealt with.
For sure.
For and everybody's we'll sake.
Absolutely. Thank you for being thank with you. Us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye for now. That was Heart Warrior Chosa, a survivor of the Chamberlain, South Dakota, St. Joseph's Residential School. And we're going to be doing, in the months ahead in the new year, probably starting in February, we'll be doing a whole series of shows with other eyewitnesses to these and other crimes. We were going to play a song at the bottom of the hour, but Don, if you wouldn't mind not playing it, because I want to give us the time to go into more detail of this. Ryan, it was one of the reasons I wanted Heart Warrior on was because when we look at these patterns of both church and state terror, and that's, of course, the mandate of the ITCCS to look into both crimes by both church and state, they follow the same pattern of predominantly psychological torture. Everything seems to follow from that. And it's almost like if you're going to commit a crime, you don't only have to cover it up, but you have to be persecuting everybody so much that they won't ever look into the crime. And that's why I think at the bottom of this terror by church and state is they're covering their own crimes, and they want everybody so afraid that they won't challenge her to look into it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's what Canadian Revenue, it's what the IRS, it's what the CPS, it's what these different child agencies do to parents who express a political opinion. I remember a couple of years ago in the UK, one political figure who was very high up in government, I can't remember his name, I think he might have been a mayor, he said that they wanted to start taking away children from parents who expressed a political opinion outside of the left-right paradigm, literally. And this has already been going on here in the United States and in Canada, where kids are taken away from their parents for expressing a want for a second medical opinion or a specific type of viewpoint on a subject that the local politician deals with. They want to target your kids. And what that basically is a fear tactic to get you to stop expressing opinions, to stop expressing points of view that are outside of the conditioned social norms. And they target children, and they target, of course, your livelihood with your finances through taxes and things like that, Kevin.
Right. Now, one of the things I was going to share with us, there was and this is paralleling very much what's going on in Europe right now, in Paris and Belgium, this fear hysteria that they're deliberately cultivating. One of the a number of months ago in British Columbia, there was all of a sudden the RCMP announced that they had arrested two young people, Amanda Carodi and John Nuttall, and they claimed that these folks had a pressure cooker bomb that they were going to let off at the provincial legislature on Canada Day in 2013. Now, what's coming in the news, this was just in the a Vancouver newspaper yesterday. This is a quote. British Columbia Supreme Court has declared that the Crown must hand over normally confidential information provided to the RCMP about these two so-called terrorists. It's been established that these two individuals were assisted by police, including how police provided them the C4 explosive for the bomb and gave them things like cash, phone cards, and transportation during a lengthy sting operation. Now, in other words, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police helped instigate this. They encouraged these two people to commit acts of terrorism against the provincial government. Now, my first question is, how come the RCMP officers who did this, how come they're not on trial? You know, it's kind of brushed over like, oh, well, you know, police do that kind of thing. It strikes a lot, it smacks a lot of what's going on in Paris, I think.
It does. In fact, in that article from the Vancouver website, it talks about how the judge in this case is looking into information relating to whether or not the RCMP reacted to the situation in good or bad faith, which they call a relevant factor. But here's an extremely important quotation from one of the chief justices, Justice Catherine Bruce, of this investigation. And she says, the RCMP must have been acutely aware that the accused contemplated the commission of a terrorist activity, knowing that this was the underlying intention of the accused, including the prescribed motives required by the definition of terrorist activity. It must be said that the RCMP knowingly facilitated a terrorist activity by providing money and other items to the accused. And this is exactly parallel to reports here in the United States about the FBI. A report came out a few years ago, I think it was middle of last year, called Inventing Terrorists, the Lawfare of Preemptive Prosecution, where it came out that the FBI sets up nearly 95% of all terrorist acts. They provide them, as you said, Kevin, in this article here from Vancouver, with explosive material. It's not always a dummy bomb. They provide them with cash, with phone cards, with transportation. They right. set them up, and then they step in to claim their prize, and the prize is acting as if they stopped some heinous act of terrorism right. against the state so that they can then push their agenda of acquiring more financing along with their already bloated right. Governmental agency.
Now, this, of course, is right on the agenda. They teach police all over the world how to do this at the School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia. Every year they have these seminars where they, you know, they bring in police and military from all over the world to how to set up and provoke your own populations who can then be repressed. So this is an organized activity by the state to train people how to do this. Let's reiterate that quote. Quote, this is from a Supreme Court judge, Catherine Bruce, in British Columbia. Quote, the RCMP knowingly facilitated a terrorist activity by providing money and other items to the accused, unquote. Okay, how does the RCMP get put on trial? They don't, because the only way that'll happen is if we create our own judicial system that can try the church and state for crimes. Now, we've started to do that with our Common Law Court of Justice, the ICLCJ. But this is more proof, staring people in the face of how you need that alternative justice system to put the state terrorists and the church terrorists on trial.
Right. It goes back to that old thought I've always had for quite a long time, especially since I started working with you. And that is, how can people like us get in more trouble for exposing the crimes of church and state than for the people that actually commit the crimes? How come they don't get in as much trouble as we do for exposing them?
Well, you know, it's really hilarious when you look at the RCMP are so inept, and they don't even bother about covering their lies. I remember a few years ago, after even the corporate media were reporting about the mass grave behind the Port Alberni Residential School that I first reported in 1998, I called up the RCMP in Port Alberni. I talked to the desk sergeant and then his superior, and I said, so what evidence do you guys have about those children buried that are probably still in the ground behind the Alberni Residential School? The cop hesitates, and then he says, we have no reports of that. And I said, well, don't you read the newspaper? Even the prime minister is talking about it, and people in parliament are talking about Alberni graves. Numerous survivors have been quoted in the press. And then he said, well, none of us worked here back then. And I said, well, what does that have to do with anything? You guys have a responsibility to investigate this. Then he hung up on me. I mean, you know, it's like they're not accountable. So how can people continue to expect accountability?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, because we weren't here then. We didn't work here then, that we can't investigate the crime.
Right. So, I mean, it's you know, it kind of reminds me a lot when you're reading these reports out of Paris and Belgium. Now, I know we have some recent updates about that. I did want to tell people that I have had reports from people who work with us in the ITCCS, which originally worked out of Brussels. They've relocated some of their activity and you know, in response to the fact that several of the people they were working with, including one of the ITCCS officials himself have been detained in Belgium as part of this. So I think it's another way for these governments to go after their opponents. One of the people who was a primary witness in these child trafficking and Ninth Circle sacrificial killings has had to move out of Holland in response to this kind of thing. So, I mean, I think this is definitely being aimed at their opponents using this whole climate to do that.
Yeah, it's the citizenry. And after this happened, Francois Hollande, I believe is how you pronounce his name, the president of France, he responded by asking Parliament for an extension of emergency powers that would exceed 3 months or would be up until 3 months, so sometime in February. And what that means is that they are able to continue the warrantless no-knock raids going into people's homes. And this is, I think, one of the most overlooked parts of this whole subject, Kevin, is that while we argue about is it a false flag, is it not a false flag, you know, who is ISIS, where did ISIS come from, we're missing a major, major red flag in the middle of all of this, and that is that the police departments and that the military are being stationed on the street in Paris. Over 10,000 additional troops are being sent in on top of the 1,000 to 3,000 that had been placed there after the Charlie Hebdo shootings at the satire newspaper back in January that killed 17 people. And what's happening is that they are literally, they have been doing this. I'm not sure how many raids have been conducted in the last few days, but as soon as it happened, police and military, or at least SWAT, went door to door, Kevin, in neighborhoods and suburbs in Paris, and they would basically go into people's homes, they would search the homes for the supposed terrorist, and then in the process of searching the home for the supposed terrorists on the run, they would find some type of illicit drug, or they would find a weapon, registered or not, and what they would do is they would take the weapon, take the drugs, and they would put the person on house arrest. This happened to over 100 people from the, I think it was 118 the last time I read about it. So what's happening here is a complete suspension of civil liberties. And Holland even came out and said that we don't want to use the most vicious, if you will, parts of the Constitution of France. We want to just basically put that on suspension, and we want emergency power so that we can conduct these raids to find the bad guys. But Kevin, it's to keep you safe.
Well, you know, exactly it'll parallel in 1933 when Hitler brought in enabling legislation to set up concentration camps and dispense civil liberties. He did it after they had burned down the Reichstag and blamed it on the Communist Party. Right. And, you know, they then started rounding people up, and not the Jews first, but the communists, the socialists, the left-wing opposition first. And then they eventually got around to the Jews years later. But, I mean, the point is that the greater threat here is the state itself, not a bunch of yo-yos running around blowing up things or shooting people. And so I agree, we shouldn't get caught up in the minutiae of what is ISIS. Like, we know that these are false flag operations already. That's known. We don't have to keep reiterating that. We have to start building campaigns to defend people on the ground. And by going on the offensive, saying these are illegal bodies that are doing these things, you know, they do not have the right to violate fundamental common law liberties we're born with. And so I recognize that in Paris as well, they banned all protests, which that's is great. Convenient because the climate change summit is about to start. So that's very handy for them. But it we have to put it back in their face very much.
Well, just a little bit ago, I was reading some news articles on the main page of Yahoo News, and I was reading there were three articles that were mainstream right now on the slider for Yahoo, and they talked about how Iran is cracking down on political dissidents and people that disagree with the state. And it was a complete, you know, brainwashing article from the mainstream media, making it look like our supposed enemy, Iran, is this tyrannical state, and this is part of the propaganda and brainwashing to push after Syria to go into Iran, which is part of a much larger agenda. It has been since the beginning, back in the first Bush administration. And what we have here, as I read this article, is I'm starting to think, how can they promote that Iran is so tyrannical when, at the same time, in the same breath, the same media sources with a straight face say, let's start prosecuting people in the United States or around the world. The BBC has done this too, that disagree with climate change. Now, it doesn't matter if you have proof or evidence or if you can discredit what scientists are saying. They want to literally lock people away if you disagree with Al Gore, if you disagree with Barack Obama. They want to put you in prison. You talk about a lockdown of society, and you talk about rounding up your political enemies, yeah. Kevin.
Well, it's criminalized, and it's also creating political sin as a category of mental illness. And this is on the rise as well, as we know. The fixated threat law. The recent thing in America where people who choose healthy food are now accused, I forget what the term was, they suffer from a mental disorder.
Orthorexia nervosa. It's considered a mental disorder to want to eat healthy.
Right, exactly. Not eating junk food, but eating healthy is a problem.
Yeah. And specifically, there was one phrase they gave to their one description they gave to this of one woman who said she has the disease and she's struggling through it. She says, if I don't know what's in my food, I'm not eating it. And they paint that mentality out to be some mental disorder that needs to be, you need to be then put on psychotropic drugs from Big Pharma.
Okay, so, you know, we step back and look at all this, Ryan, and it's kind of one of our themes is looking at this corporatocracy that's spreading its tentacles around the planet. And there's no point thinking in the old terms anymore that we're living under accountable governments that we elect. I mean, it's a whole new game plan here, and our response has to be different. So I want to spend the last 3 minutes talking about some of the things we've discussed before in terms of our responses, not just the common law courts, but what we can do in our communities to actually start giving people the hope and the means to confront these things and take back our power and our identity from the system. I do want to flag the fact that over the next couple of months, the Radio Free Canada is taking a short reprieve. We're going to be, next week is going to be our last show for a couple of months. Early in February, probably the first week in February, we'll be back on the air. That's because during December and January, we're going to be doing some reorganizing and working on some very important projects, including local documentaries and other things to get these common law courts and local people's assemblies off the ground. So, you know, Ryan and I and others are going to be working full time on that. The show will recommence in the first week in February. That's our plan. But that doesn't stop us from doing a lot in the meantime. As a matter of fact, we're going to be posting a lot on YouTube, on public access television all over America, which is now broadcasting our stuff. So just to let people know, it'll be a brief hiatus, but we will be back. But Ryan, let me just go back to that question and ask your own thoughts about that.
Well, first of all, I want to let people know that in the meantime, while Radio Free Canada sort of takes a little bit of a break, I'm sure that over the next couple of months, you'll obviously be back on my show, The Secret Teachings, every Saturday and Sunday. So you'll be back on there. People can probably keep up with you by listening there as well. But in order to answer your question, I think one of the biggest points, one of the biggest red flags to raise here, Kevin, as I mentioned about these warrantless searches and whatnot, is the fact that people continue. I actually had this happen last night when I was on radio doing my live show, and there were people that said, "This is very political. Why are we still talking about politics? We want to hear about more specifics. We were tired of hearing about politics." And I said, "It's not about politics. It's about making sure that we do not give up our liberties and our freedoms for this perception of security, this perception of safety. It's not about politics. It's about human liberty and freedom. And as you mentioned earlier, we've discussed so many times on the radio program here and others, it's not about this system we have prosecuting those that are responsible for these crimes. It is the system that is responsible for these crimes or for covering up these crimes or covering up for people that have committed certain crimes of both church and state. So that is where the common law courts come into play. We have to create a whole new paradigm. It's not political. This is about human liberty and freedom across the board, irregardless of your religious or political affiliations.
Right. Now, part of that paradigm you talk about, that new paradigm, Ryan, is we have to stop making reference to the system that is trying to reform it, trying to appeal to it for justice. Right. We have to create a new system altogether. Our eyes have to be on the future, not the past. And so this is part of the program we're going to be trying to get into place over the next little while. We've tried it already in Canada with some limited success with the Republic movement. But what we're realizing now is this is global and people have to start where they are. So we're going to be doing, one of the things we're going to be working on is putting together training programs. Not for most people. We're aiming at those people who are already awake and willing to do something, like Hard Warrior Chosa, who, you know, mentioned how she was set aside from before she was born to be a warrior, to lead the struggle. Those are the kind of people we got to reach out, organize, and train into being really the tip of the spear, if you like. Because you've got to have that organized vanguard, if you like. Otherwise, you're not going to bring most of the people with you. We've got to organize those people. And that's going to be one of the purposes of what we're doing over the next while. You mentioned that I'll be on your show, definitely. But I want to say to the listeners, ITCCS.org will have regular updates about what we're doing. So follow the updates there. Also write to us, ITCCSoffice@gmail.com or hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com.
Yeah, I think another thing that's important to realize, Kevin, about what we're discussing here in the final minutes of Radio Free Kanata this week is that as we understand, this is not about politics, and this is not about a right or a left side or a religious point of view. It's about human liberty and freedom for all. And in terms of what we can do as individuals at a grassroots level, this is a realization that I've had from the beginning when I first started reading, researching, interviewing people, doing radio, doing videos, going to film school. It all seemed overwhelming, and I wanted to attack the monster, attack the beast from all angles at once. I wanted to be a jack of all trades, if you will. And what I realized is that I can do that to some extent. You can do that to some extent, but there are certain areas that we excel at more than others. And so whether it's you, Kevin, or whether it's me, or any of you listening out there, let's say that there's, you know, specifically 1,000 people right now listening that want to do exactly what we're talking about. They want to get involved and they want to do something about the state of affairs in the world. Well, not every one of you have to set back and become a jack of all trades. If you have a skill in video, then use that skill in video. If you have a skill in radio, use that skill in radio. If your skill is researching news on the internet and putting together and piecing together the different aspects of this global tapestry, then do that. If your skill is publicly speaking, then use that skill. The point is, use the skills that you have and don't try to come at this from all angles at once, because we each have our specialized areas, and that is what is very important to realize. Find that skill, hone that skill, and use that skill.
Well, exactly. I was just talking to a couple of folks in Ontario today. I won't say the town, but they are going to be setting up their own common law training program for local activists and people in the community, teaching them how to, for example, when they face police harassment, what to do, you know, and also how to withdraw your involvement in the system and put it into a different system. We mentioned these people's assemblies, and these are means by which people can establish local governing bodies to say, okay, what are the laws we want in our community? How are we going to police our community? How are we going to keep control over our children, keep our environment clean, you know, and healthy, like our bodies and our minds? All of that is in the hands of we the people and nobody else. And I think this is the underlying theme of everything we're doing.
Right, and it's also not what I call a light switch solution. You don't just flip the switch and everything changes. It takes a long time. And if you want to see that change, you need to be that change, and you need to start on that path to making that change now rather than being complacent and leaving the world worse off than when you received it.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. You know, I find this is a real transition time. And in moments like that, when we're at these historic crossroads, there's a real, like in a human individual life, there is a choices that have to happen. Choices are never easy. I often think that when I look at my own life over 20 years, often, if it was just left up to me, I wouldn't have chosen to lose my children or lose my ability to earn a living or follow the career I had trained for. I wouldn't have chosen any of that, but it's forced upon me. And then you have to realize that we're given a purpose, and it wasn't what we were raised with. You know, the universe gives us these purposes, and when you're given that reason, you're also given the means. You're given the strength to carry on and be an example to others to wake up and take action. So I realize that, you know, that's something that goes on inside us, but it also has to manifest collectively in the work we do together.
And I think it does, and I think that also plays into what I was just mentioning a moment ago, is that we all have to find purpose that we have, and we have to hone those purposes, those skills, and then we have to utilize them to make a difference. And you don't have to be everything that Kevin is or everything that I am or a combination of the two. You just be yourself, and you take the skills that you have, and you utilize those skills. And you'll find that you'll be able to slip into your real purpose. Maybe you think you have a skill in something, you start doing it, it doesn't turn out the way that you think it's going to turn out. I'm speaking broad here for a reason. And then you eventually fall into something that is your real purpose. Very quick 10-second example. I went to film school. I wanted to get into television production. And in film school, I fell into radio. And from radio, just typical current event talking news on the radio station in the morning, turned into what I'm doing now with Kevin. And that's my true purpose. And that's what led me down that path.
Well, thank you, brother. We've got only a couple of minutes left, so I want to remind everyone, next week is our last show for a couple of months, but that's a springboard to even greater activity in the new year. with the agreement of the good folks at BBS Radio. We'll be back on the air Sunday, February 7th. That's the first Sunday in February. And until then, please stay tuned. We're going to be doing a lot. We'll be summarizing this more next week. Please tune into our last show, November 29th, last show until February. And in the meantime, again, there will be regular updates at itccs.org. Ryan, any final thoughts or announcements?
Yeah, first of all, I have a quick question for you, though. In the meantime, are people able to go to bbsradio.com/Radio Free Kannada and download the past shows?
Yes, my understanding is that the website will still be up and people will be able to go into our archive, which is on the main page there, bbsradio.com/Radio Free Kannada. And all of our shows going back almost a year will be there. So I urge people to do that as well.
Great. So obviously you can go there, downloads, and you can go to my website as well. It's www.thesecretteachings.info, not just for the free show archive with hundreds and hundreds of episodes over the last 6 years. Many of them, there are, I think, five or six specific big shows with Kevin where we talk about much of what we talk about here on Radio Free Kannada in a much more expanded sense. And of course, tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I will be live once again. We'll be discussing current events and the state of affairs in the world, including a literal definition of terrorism and human liberty and freedom.
Thanks, Ryan. I just did get a note from one of the BBS guys that, yes, the format is going to stay the same. Everything will be up still. We'll be on the air February 7th, same time, 6 p.m. Eastern time, on Sundays. And please go to those archives and pour through them and stay tuned for announcements of our of public access television broadcasts that are happening now. Our material is going out to literally millions of people on across America and hopefully soon across Canada. On behalf of Ryan and Heart Warrior and all the people out there who think they're alone but aren't, and all of our ancestors and the ones who've suffered who look to us today to carry on the struggle, I want to thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned at itccs.org. And we'll see you next week in our last show in this year. Please tune in. And until then, stay strong and stay clear.